And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
You hungry? I ain't no snitch.
Let's be honest. There's 29 NBA teams, and then there's a G League roster with a few stars.
They have a math problem offensively.
This is Nerder, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Thursday. I'm Dave Dufour here with Seth and Mo, and that means it's Nerder She Wrote. What's up, guys? How was your All-Star break?
I'm feeling refreshed, Dave. Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Do we want to talk?
A few days off.
I know that we're a little late here.
I'm not sure I can handle the contrast in energy between Dave and Mo right now. It's really.
I know. I was a little low.
I was trying to juice him up.
Yeah, he's juicing me up.
Yeah.
Because I normally am doing that to you guys, but I was thinking
full
like,
macho
as I was
man
talking,
savage from Mo.
Do we want to talk about All Star at all? Do you guys, I forgot to ask you before we started, even though we did all this, like, we sat here for 30 minutes.
Mo, what's the best thing about All-Star?
Seth Curry's 15, 16 threes.
Oh, God damn it, Mo, come on.
For me, it was Michael Jordan.
Jordan.
That was the best thing.
The guy you want, the guy who you would have thought would have given you the answer you wanted, didn't even give you that.
The answer is...
The Elam ending.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, it was fun.
But it's great for All-Star. That's it.
Yeah. I get you, Mo. I appreciate Mo cares about, historical context. And maybe
no,
we don't,
as
much.
I actually don't. Stop framing it that way. I don't give a historical context. But I think having the idea of worrying about time and score and intelligent basketball is something I want to have.
There you go. It doesn't matter.
A lot of today.
The Elam ending was fun. LeBron James hitting a fadeaway game winner was fun. But the guys on Buzz, I thought, kind of captured the magic quite a bit. So we won't sit and rehash it. But I did enjoy the experience. I wish that they would lean harder into making it for kids. Maybe get kids to judge the dunk contest so I don't have to hear adults complain about it. But other than that, it was awesome. Right off the top, guys, weirdness continues in New Orleans. The Anthony Davis saga was very weird, and we know how that ended up. The Zion Williamson career so far has been highlights and then a lot of nothing. Will Guillory had a great story at The Athletic. I highly recommend everyone go and read it. He lays out the entire thing very, very plainly. Everyone but Zion has something to say about Zion. And what's the problem there? When there's a vacuum, people are going to fill it with whatever they have to say. CJ McCollum was asked over the weekend at All-Star if he had talked to Zion, had not heard from him since the trade. They have since spoken, apparently. JJ Redick on First Take with Stephen A. Smith called Zion essentially a bad teammate.
I wasn't the best player on any team I was on. But if there was a buyout possibility, if there was a trade possibility, I would always reach out to team. I called Ersan Ilyasova. I called Marco. I called Wes Matthews trying to get him to come to Philly. Like, this just shows a complete lack of investment.
Said he was disconnected. Are you guys worried about Zion and his career at this point? Or is this just a guy who's been dealing with some tough injuries? He's a huge guy, and those injuries are hard to come back from. And then maybe it's just this is normal for athletes to go through, but he's going through it extremely publicly because he is Zion.
I am worried about Zion. I'm worried about Zion's career. I'm worried about Zion's career in New Orleans.
I don't think him not having spoken to CJ McCollum speaks to that really. I don't think he is he's not the first player who has rehabbed a long-term injury away from a team. I think him rehabbing in Portland at Nike is about the only good thing that's about the Zion story right now, because you want to talk about an entity that is both capable and has interests very clearly aligned with his. It's Nike, just because, you know, they possibly have as much to lose, if not more, as New Orleans does in the situation. So all that, I think, is the least bad thing. And, you know, him not being around the team, and a guy got traded for a week ago, and it's the All-Star break. Like, should he have called and said, hey, what's up? Yeah, sure, that's fine. But I think we're making a little bit of a mountain out of a molehill and fitting something into a narrative. It's a plausible narrative about, you know, Zion and whatever's going on with him in New Orleans. But I don't think that I don't think he's like, you know what, I hate New Orleans so much, I'm not even calling CJ. I don't think that's.
No, I don't. Well, one, I agree with Seth on the CJ side of it, right? Like, all right, look, and also he's a young kid, 20 years old. Like, I'm not really going to be on him on etiquette, whereas me at 40 still has issue with certain etiquette rules in general life. So I'm not going to be on Zion for that stuff. But the stuff I find interesting is, you know, JJ Redick saying he's been disconnected since he's been there. And that's a problem. And I don't necessarily mean it in a sense of career-wise or things like that, but you want your franchise guy connected. That was one of my biggest complaints of LeBron's first year as a Laker, you know, and it was a rough year and that stuff. It was the kids and all the things there. But he did not feel at all connected to the team, was rarely talking to the guys. You know, you would see him the way you see him now with the team and things like that. There's a level of connectivity you want to have with your top guys. I don't think Zion's going to be a leader. I don't think he's the type of guy, from what we've seen so far, is really wanting to be your team leader so far, at least at this young age of his career, which is 100% okay. But like, you want to feel that your franchise guy is connected. And I can kind of understand where it's coming from, in the sense of him feeling disconnected, disengaged, is actually a really bad look. And I think that's where you're starting to have issues. And it started before this season, even from what we've heard from JJ Redick in his stuff on First Take.
If we're parsing this, I don't even blame Zion. I think this isn't the only team we've seen this with, where even if a guy, you're very certain the guy is your franchise, you don't give the keys to a teenager. I mean, it's, you know, the like someone who has to learn how to in not just be a professional basketball, be a professional. Like, you're like asking them to do all the good franchise stuff. It's you're setting yourself up for failure. And if you're giving that person, you know, the ability to ask for things without any sort of pushback, and have like, you're not setting yourself up to have a good environment. And maybe it works if it's Tim Duncan, but that's not everyone's Tim Duncan, or very few are. Or maybe a more modern example would be Giannis. But even Giannis, it took him several years before he really realized, hey, I can ask for stuff. And he was already kind of, you know, an MVP level player when that got there. So I think that this is, frankly, it's an organizational failure. Whatever you want to say about, Zion's response to it, like, you know, 19-year-old kid asks for thing. Okay. You know, I know that when my daughter in 11 years, when she's, you know, probably a sophomore in college and she'll ask for things, and it's going to be my job to say no. And, you know, I think that the Pelicans didn't do a good enough job saying no often enough, early enough. So that leads you to this situation.
It's interesting, because it really has felt like the Pelicans have been playing defense the moment they drafted him, right? And that was and I wonder how much of that came off the heels of David Griffin having to get ready to trade Anthony Davis. And I think that was, you know, from that, okay, we got to keep Zion. We got to keep him happy. We got to do all these things for him and all of that stuff. And I think just in general, like babying guys, you know, and players, even all the way to somebody as LeBron, as we're seeing the Lakers go through their massive struggles right now, never pans out well for the team. It never works out in the long run for the team for the most part. And I think, you know, that's something to keep an eye on. And I think that's the stuff there with the Zion stuff. But I'm just saying, like, the disconnected stuff, it's got to be a worrying sign for New Orleans in the sense of, like, if this is coming out, and I'll believe JJ because he seems to be a relatively straight shooter. He's taken down both the front office a year ago when he got traded and then now going at Zion, you know, a fellow Duke alumni, which, you know, you don't assassinate your own family in that sense.
No, I mean, you made the LeBron comparison, and LeBron is LeBron. And at this point in his career, it's probably I know we didn't want to talk about LeBron a lot, but like, the, you know, it came out that he wants to end his career playing with his son. And it's okay. Well, was it in 3 years? Is it going to be worth structuring our franchise around that? You know, that's an open question at this point, whether that's the kind of deal that's worth it. And that's LeBron, who is, you know, one of the top 2-3 greatest players of all time. Zion, for as good a prospect as he is not that. And you can't start by ordering everything around him before he's done anything. Even like, to the extent that Dallas revolves around Luka. Yeah. But even to the extent they did, he was already EuroLeague. Like, he was, you know, he was not there. Yeah.
He had a resume. Yeah.
And so that's, and you know, okay, we just had to figure out how to trade Anthony Davis. Yeah. After he was there for 7 years. Like, okay, coming to the end of his second contract, we have to trade him. You can't start the rookie contract going, oh my God, this guy's going to, I don't want to leave.
Yeah. And just again, you know, obviously Griff never had a chance really with AD because he just came in that sense. I don't want to put the failures of the Pelicans before Griffin got there.
Really the front office
and that stuff. But I do think, seriously, that was the problem for them. The moment he came in, they were thinking already, how are we going to keep him? And I'm like, yo, he's going to be a restricted free agent. You're fine. You know, you deal with it from there. But I will say this. I think this is where the Ben Simmons saga is going to be very interesting for Zion and his team. You know, they got to watch Ben Simmons basically find a way out after having signed a pretty long extension and a lot of money on the line. And, you know, he's ended up in a great situation now that we're going to end up talking about, I'm sure, at some point in this podcast. But, like, I wonder if you're Zion's team, you're looking at it going, like, see, we could sign the extension. I mean, we might take some bad press for a while, but we could sign the extension and eventually demand the trade and get you out of there pretty quickly. So I think that's going to be something that I'd keep an eye on going forward with all this. I don't think Zion's taking the qualifying offer. I keep hearing people talk about that, and I'm like, that's insane.
Well, they can offer him a 5-year extension this summer. They don't have to. They can. They don't have to. And I don't think that they will. I can't imagine they will. That'll break my brain if they do. I mean, I'm not ready for that reality.
I'm the other way around. I'm shocked. I'd be surprised if they didn't.
I mean, if it's going to be the 5-year extension, it's got to be at the max.
Right.
And yeah. So I have to, I mean, do you do that if you've got some kind of, like, you know, some of the sort of the Embiid like games played qualifiers to give yourself an out? Like, I don't even like it is a difficult situation because on one hand, you have to protect yourself. On the other hand, you have to protect yourself, but it's still like those are pulling in opposite directions. So I don't, it's on one level, a good problem to have because of his talent. On the other hand, it is a very, you know, it's a very high, it's a high wire with not so much of a net.
That is a gamble. Like, legitimately, that's all that is. There's no other way to paint it.
Yep.
YOLO. His health has just been, you know, it's so up and down. And again, this guy, I mean, can you name another athlete ever that was built like this guy and that explosive?
Bo Jackson. And
but not playing basketball.
Yeah, no, but and Bo Jackson ran out of his own hip socket, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
That's insane. Still insane. It still messes me up when I think about that. I'm like, damn, that's really like how. But I would say the closest comparison, and Seth touched on it, is Embiid. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you look at how it's finally has stabilized for him, and lo and behold, he was finished second in MVP last year and is in the running this year for it. There is some precedent if you can figure it out. And I know what you're going to say size wise, but
No. This is where I want to double back to what Seth said. And I actually think that the Nike training thing is a positive because he is going to be locked in and hopefully get the body part under control. Whatever else is happening that's making him a disconnected teammate, the body part is the important part right now because he can't even play basketball. So he's a zero teammate. And that's what they have to solve first.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, so the Eastern Conference is, I don't know, it's not a train wreck, but it is an impending battle.
Demolition derby?
I wouldn't call it a train wreck. This is beautiful, guys. I don't know what you guys are talking about. This is amazing.
The play-in, to me, is great. But even just the top eight, the normal, what we would consider playoff, there is seven games separating the Brooklyn Nets, who are the current eight seed, and the Miami Heat, who are the one seed. And the Brooklyn Nets, we don't know yet, but they may just get Kyrie Irving in home games, Ben Simmons, and Kevin Durant in the next week. We don't know yet. All of this is on the table. Now, they need to, because it's going to get late really fast for them.
I know we're talking Nets, but I thought of another one that I want to get off. It's Russian roulette. Okay, guys, it's just after every night, go check out the standings, and it's a whole different, maybe it's just roulette, not Russian roulette. Maybe I went a little far. Seth gave me a face and I got Russian a little roulette. Bit.
That's more of the playoff seeding, right?
Yeah, because okay.
I actually think that this year, we may see more jockeying for seeds in March and April than ever before in the East. Because look right now, if the playoffs started today, this is just an absolute mess.
Make seeding matter.
The Bucks are playing the Cavs in the first round of the playoffs.
Make seeding matter.
Yes.
I want to see this come into play. The number one seed gets to pick their first round playoff opponent.
That would be fantastic, but I think that seeding does matter because the home court matters a lot.
Yeah.
We're seeing that in the playoffs, and this year with there's not a giant talent gap. Like, there is no perfect team.
Plus, in the long history of the play-in tournament, we've never seen them win a playoff series.
Okay, all right. So let's swing back to the Nets now that we've had that digression. Okay, so Brooklyn. We don't know what they're going to be yet. We have some ideas.
No outcome from getting knocked out in the play into winning the championship would surprise me.
None whatsoever.
Such a wide variance. It's so weird.
They could conceivably. This could be like a 16-4 playoff run for them, right? If everything is just breaking right, and we get, I mean, KD last year. Like that playoff KD with help, that's insane. But what do you guys think they need to focus on? I mean, you know, we're 45 days from the playoffs, and we know they're adding so many new pieces. And I'm sure we're going to sit and talk about chemistry and all that stuff. But I want to know specifically, what do they need to be focusing on the rest of the way?
They need to get everybody back and then start figuring out how they're going to defend. That's really my biggest question mark for them. They got a great, probably one of the top five defenders in the league in Ben Simmons when he's, from when we last saw him. Obviously, it's been a while, so assuming, I'm just assuming he's coming back the way he was. And, you know, they have KD. After that, they have no size on the wings. None. They're all small. They just picked up Goran Dragic in the buyout market. He's not even ready to play. Steve Nash is saying it's going to take a while to get him ready to go. And again, they're all short, you know, but there's not a lot of size in the wing area. And that's, they're going to have to figure out how they're going to handle that defensively. They're going to be pretty damn good on offense. I'm sorry, folks. I know people are like, well, with Ben Simmons, is that? No, that's a great fit for them offensively as well. I think it's going to work out really well on that end. But it's going to be, what are you going to do on the defensive end to counteract the fact that you're really small in the wing area?
And this is another way that not having Joe Harris is a problem for them. You know, it's going to be more Seth Curry. It's going to be more Patty Mills. By the way, fantastic offensive players and decent defenders. But Mo, that's a great point, is that they're going to be small. They run into a team like the Celtics with the big wings that need to be guarded. You've got Ben Simmons.
You got Ben Simmons and KD. I'm not.
You think KD is like with Jason Tatum? Like, I don't know if I want KD in that kind of trouble. Like, I mean, foul trouble, right? Like, I don't want to.
KD has his. You know, we've only seen one playoff run post Achilles, but certainly pre Achilles, like KD in the postseason was an all defensive level player. So Now what can he dial that back up? Will it be easier for him to dial that back up if he has, you know, in the Bucks series, he probably wasn't that last year, but you know, the load he had to carry offensively was, and he wasn't bad defensively in that series, but he was like, you know, okay, I've got to shoot 45 times a night and guard Brook Lopez. Like, so there's only so, like, what more do you need from me aside from my, you know, my shoes to be half a size smaller? But no, I think that that's like they have the basis of at least a competent and competitive defense just by starting with those two guys. Like,
they're closing games, probably. I mean, who's going to be their big? Is it going to be Andre Drummond or is it going to be KD? I think
against everybody but Philly and maybe Milwaukee, I think they're closing with Simmons and KD as the 4 and 5.
But then, so fill out the other three spots.
I mean,
Kyrie, Seth Curry, and Bruce and Brown. I don't.
I mean, I think
like that's
I don't
that's
know.
A really small. Yeah, that's small. A really small. That's what I'm talking about.
I mean, now,
like,
now you're starting to get into small like Kessler Edwards or
I think it's
like so. I actually think it will be Drummond. I actually think they don't. I don't think they have the pieces to go that small. Because of that, you know, and you lose out. That's even if it's Bruce Brown, you're losing out on offense, right? So you're gonna have a non-shooter out there. Well, you might as well play Drummond and then level up size wise. If you're putting in whatever, any combination of the four guards, you know, you're basically gonna have a problem defensively at three different spots. And it's a guard and wing league, so it's very challenging in that sense. And then you put stress on Simmons and Durant to be your backline defenders in that instance. I just kind of think it's gonna end up being Drummond. I've tried to look at it so many different ways. I've looked at the Charlie Day with the maps and the lines and trying to figure it out, going crazy the past few days, and I just can't find it. Where I just keep coming back to, damn, they're going to end up having to play Drummond in crunch time, which I don't think is bad. He's been really good. He's been good for he was good for the Sixers. I think a couple of games he has played for the Nets, he's been really good. They get killed on the boards on a regular basis. I think that's a guy that's going to be able to help them out there rebounding. And then you have those guys, KD and Simmons, then it gets a swarm a little bit more defensively. I think I kind of think I like it.
And I actually think, man, Drummond isn't – you know, just dead when he gets caught on an island. Not that I don't know how much they're going to have to switch, to be honest with you, in the East, but he's not dead when he's caught out on an island. And I like when he facilitates from the elbows. His two-man game with Seth Curry is pretty good. I'm with you. I think it's going to be Drummond. Anything else on Brooklyn that you guys are worried about? I mean, I think the offense is just going to we're not going to be able to calculate it. Keep thinking about Kyrie, Seth Curry, Patty Mills, Simmons, and Kevin Durant as just a, I mean, what, Where does the ball get stuck aside from Kyrie, right? Like, I mean, Kyrie's wide open.
Kyrie's a good ball mover. He's a good ball mover. You know, that's something that probably doesn't get talked about much about last season. Was he did a great job swinging the ball and not being a ball stopper like you probably were used to a little bit in the Boston era type of stuff. You know, he does a good job with that stuff. I honestly think this is I wrote about it, but I think with Simmons, they can actually run a Golden State Warriors type offense to a degree. And then when they run into trouble, do what the Warriors did when they have Durant. Here you go, KD. ISO. Like, they're in a great, I think offensively, they're in a great position.
Yeah, that's their playoff offense.
That's their best defense is going to be, okay, fine. We're going to score, 1.5 points per possession. You've got some advantages on offense. Good luck. I think that might be their best defense in the playoffs.
And then give it to Drummond to run all the breaks. That's going to be my favorite part, man. Andre Drummond is a joy to watch. I don't know if there are 10 more entertaining players in the league.
Are you drunk?
No, that's a joke. I mean, come on, man. He throws a crazy-ass pass anytime he does something good. It's awesome. Cool. I love that for him. Toronto, guys, has really turned it around. And I think the key to their turnaround has been Pascal Siakam. He has looked like an all-NBA player the last couple months. I think he might make all-NBA, to be honest with you. He's tracking that way. And they are currently the 7 seed. So they're a half a game behind Boston for that 6 seed. What do they need to focus on the rest of the way? I mean, this is a pretty young team, but man, rangy wings and that defense.
Finding more than 6 dudes.
A high ceiling.
That's what they need
more
on.
Than 6 guys.
Who's
their big? Boucher's not going to cut it.
No, they're just going to run 3 wings.
I mean, Scotty Barnes is large, but he's not a big.
No. So that's their concern, right? It's like they have to figure out how they're going to guard Embiid. I don't know how you guard Embiid. How are you going to guard against Philly? How are you going to guard against Milwaukee?
I mean, they're in a tough spot. It's what Seth was saying, though. Like, they got to hope Scotty Barnes had a growth spurt during the All-Star break or something and has come back, 6'10". They're just in a tough position. That was the one thing I was surprised when they made the trade that they got that young back in that trade for Goran Dragic, where I was like, man, you guys need a big. Like, I don't know if the Spurs would be willing to, but I would have tried to get Jakob Poeltl or something. You needed some size in that area. I think that's going to be the one thing that holds them back. But, they're rolling right now. They're very interchangeable. Defensively, they can switch literally everything. Basically 2 through 5 is a switch scenario for them. And they're in a solid position in that sense. Fred VanVleet's throwing up fireballs. And if Siakam can continue offensively rolling the way he was going into the All-Star break, they're a feisty team. They're a tough, tough playoff team. But, I mean, what are we really expecting them to do?
I don't want to discount what they're doing, because I think before the year, most of us had kind of written them off, and maybe we took too much stock in the Tampa season. Check the tape.
I was right. Check the tape. I had called it.
You did. And so they've sort of, I'm not going to call them a surprise to us because, we watch them, but I would say that at large, they've kind of surprised everybody a little bit. Seth, is this we pat them on the head and just say, nice job, and we'll see you next year? Or do you think that they could actually, can they push a team in the first round of the playoffs the way that they're currently constructed? And by push, I mean, a competitive 6 games, maybe a 7 game series against, one of the top half teams in the East.
With the exception of Cleveland, I have a hard time seeing them being a genuine threat. Those games aren't going to be fun, but I don't think they have enough to genuinely threaten the other East teams. Just, they have enough shooting, not really. Do they have enough size? Not really. Do they have enough depth? Not really. All that, that's coming at this from a negative angle. But, I mean, it's been I think you'd have to say it's been a successful season for them, with Van Vliet taking a step forward, Siakam getting back to a level, Trent emerging as a high-level kind of player, and, Scottie Barnes probably the rookie of the year. Like, that's okay. Like, everything that you could have really – not everything, but a lot of what you could have hoped to have gone right for them this season has. So, that use that as a stepping stone and not totally worry that the playoffs will probably be thanks for coming for them.
Yeah, I mean, and they're fun to watch. God, they're fun. Scotty Barnes is, I don't know, man. He's a unique
large player. He's very large.
Yeah, it really is.
He looks like, so I, like the first time I saw, like a lot of, normally you get the feeling of when you see a guy in college and then he gets the NBA, he looks smaller. Like DeAndre Ayton looked jacked in college and then he looks kind of skinny in the NBA. Scotty Barnes somehow looks bigger. Just like he looks like yes. He looks like the dudes from Prometheus. Just like striving over the court.
That he got.
He's still growing. He's still like, what is he, 18, 19 years old?
He's
going to
be 6'12 by the time this podcast comes out.
6'13.
Yeah, that's what we need. The Boston Celtics, guys, they are currently the sixth seed. So they're in the real playoffs, even though I count the play-in. I don't care. They've been on a nice run the last couple weeks. We've been paying more attention to them, just, you know, everyone in general. Listen to the last 2 weeks. 6-1. They have a 97.3 defensive rating. Their defense now, since they've added Derek White, has the ability to just turn the faucet off. We've seen Cleveland do it. We've seen Milwaukee do it before. We've seen Cleveland do it a couple times this year. But Boston now has that. What do they need to focus on, guys? Seth, before we started, I mean, you kind of came in at me because I was saying, wait, do we believe in Boston just in the pre-show? And you were like, whoa.
You know, Boston lost a lot of close games early in the year, and they've been a team that's underperformed their point differential all year. And now we're kind of seeing this run that they are pretty good, and they made possibly the most impactful trade at the deadline. Derek White's not the best player that got moved. But in terms of like a fit, like you talk about their top 6 and 7 and their versatility and ability to guard in any conceivable style and configuration. Like think of Toronto and then add one more body and 2 elite shot makers. And, you know, and also, you know, quality interior play where they have, you know, Al Horford, who's still a very good positional defender, and Robert Williams, who might be the best. Is he the best help side defender in the NBA now? Like not talking about like, you know, the straight drop coverage, protect the rim, like Rudy Gobert, but you know,
Giannis would like a word.
Yeah, I was going to say. There's an MVP defensive player of the year guy.
Continue on with your point. He's been really
good. Robert Williams has the energy to focus on that a little bit more than not having to carry it. 30 whatever offensive usage. So maybe I'm getting a little reckless. Having been a long time, you know,
you've been hanging out with Dave too.
Yeah. Having been a long time, you know, owner of, on Timeshare Island, Time Lord Share Island. But, I think that they're super dangerous and, probably aren't getting talked about enough, even though but a number of people have noticed that, like, you know, 538 has them as the most likely team to, I think that's a little far, but I think that they are they're someone who needs to be reckoned with in the playoffs.
All right, so we like Rob Williams, we like Derek White, we like Jaylen Brown, we like Jason Tatum, you know, we love Marcus Smart. Mo, what do they need to focus on? What is going to trip them up come playoff time if they don't solve it along the way?
Me, the word me. If they start focusing on the me instead of the we, that's the issue. What's really taken them off has been their ball movement on offense, right? Their offensive end has been very impressive. The first half of the season, or the first, like till the new year, it was literally dribble up, maybe one pass, dribble, 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 sidestep shot, step back, wild jumper, whatever. There was no ball movement, and I killed them for it. They have really turned the corner on this. The ball is flying around the court. It's not even necessarily a lot of passes, but they're finding guys. They're getting into their offense a lot quicker. They're getting better looks just off of that stuff. And if they continue to do that, that's fine. Now, how long that holds will be a big question. That's why I thought, you know, I agree with Seth and that the importance of Derek White, just the another ball mover. right? A guy coming from the Spurs system of like, do something within 0.5 seconds, you know, and not hold the ball and stuff like that. If they can keep that going, in particular, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown keep that going, it'll make them as tough of a team as Seth is talking about. If they start reverting to that one-on-one game again, they're really going to struggle. And I think that's going to be the two Celtic teams that you got to look out for. The good one that moves the ball and the one that plays one-on-one. The one that plays one-on-one doesn't win a lot of games. The one that does puts you in a position where you're going to be able to be a real threat come playoff time.
And I think the frustrating thing about the Tatum and Brown going one-on-one too much is that's the kind of way you would play if you had guys on your team you couldn't throw the ball to and expect them to make a play. And I don't think Al Horford and Robert Williams are going to break a guy down and get a bucket offensively, but they're both guys who can make plays with balls in their hand, the ball in their hand. Like Robert Williams has always been, I've always thought his skill level and his ability to pass the ball has always been underrated coming out of college. And I think we've seen that this year. And obviously Al Horford has been one of the better passing bigs in the NBA for a while. So just moving the ball and using those skills, those guys' ability to operate kind of from the high post, just allows them to get, you know, with the defense they play, they don't need to get like, you know, wide open looks every time down the court. Just make it a little easier so that not every possession has to be Tatum and Brown against the clock.
And they've been, during this run where their defense has been crazy, they've been kind of middle of the road in the league offensively because, you know, they didn't have to be. And still, their differential is 17.8 in those seven games because of their ability to crank it up on defense. And if they don't want you to get a shot up, you don't have to. Like, you're not going to get a shot up. That's incredible.
But that's the thing, too, though. Like, if offense leads to defense, defense leads to offense. And those are the important things that are going into that stuff. That's why they're all interconnected. This isn't football, right? Where when you play defense, a whole new system comes in, right? When you go to offense, the other group comes in. It's back and forth and that stuff, and they play off of each other. And I think it's really important for Boston. When they start going to that one-on-one stuff, you tend to have guys not as invested defensively. And I think that's the important thing for them. So I think it just, even though the offensive rating hasn't gone skyrocketed or anything like that, it keeps the guys, as we talked about early in the show, keeps them connected, right? That buzzword, and keeps them engaged in the game. So I think that's the important aspect of what that offense does for that team as a whole.
Yeah, well, Mike D'Antoni's whole thing, right? The ball has energy. Yeah. And the only way for everyone to have some energy is for everybody to touch the ball. And it doesn't have to happen every time, but it helps if a bunch of guys touch the ball every time. By the way, Ime Udoka, the first two or three months of the season compared to the last 2 months, the discourse has totally changed.
A lot of people in Boston owe him an apology.
I'm not going to go that far just because that's sports.
No, they do. They didn't give the dude any chance.
They did not give him a chance. I mean, this is a brand new coach, and man, they were trying to run. I mean, take this with a grain of salt. Trying to run him out of town, essentially. And a lot of that was, you know, figuring it out with a new squad.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yermans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
All right, the next three teams we're going to talk about are kind of basically statistically tied. They're 2.5 games back from the two teams tied at the top, and we'll start with Milwaukee here in the 5 seed. I think that the story up to now, very similar to a lot of teams, but health has been a big issue for them. They've had all their best players out of the lineup at some point this season. Brooke Lopez, been gone all year, still questionable whether or not he's going to come back. I do like the Ibaka pickup. Mo, what do they need to focus on the rest of the way outside of health?
I think they need to be consistent. I mean, they're kind of playing going about this season almost like a flip the switch type team, right? Like, you know, they'll blow out somebody one night and then lose the next game. It's along those lines of, all right, you went through the season, great. Last 20, 25 games or so, let's get back to our stuff and start playing properly. The one thing that I don't think people are going to realize, I'm not a big Dante DiVincenzo fan, but losing him and then losing Pat Connaughton on top of that to an injury, now you're getting real thin up there, right? They just re-signed DeAndre Bembry. They picked him up off the buyout market. They just got somebody else. Who did they just?
Javon Carter. Also another net. So they're getting the corporate knowledge from Brooklyn.
Yeah, because that's going to be helpful because they're going to play the same way.
Yeah, it's going to be like, please tell us the offense.
KD stands there and we throw him the ball and then.
Yeah. But I think
I like those pickups though.
I like those pickups, but it's still going to be it's they got to get themselves going now, and I just want to see consistency in the last 20 games. Maybe flip the switch now.
You're right. They need to flip it now. The last couple weeks for them have not been good. I mean, this defense, which is, I think, their calling card, has been 23rd the last 2 weeks, 117.2, and they went 4-3 in that stretch. And this is not the way that I'm positive. This is not how they thought they'd be playing right now. How much of this is Brooke Lopez missing?
Yes.
Seth? Like, is that the big thing?
I think that that's a, you know, they can play really good defense without him, but it's on kind of a knife's edge. Just his ability to basically wall off the paint as, win right as, you know, a one person gang, just allows for so many other mistakes to get cleaned up. And that allows for, you know, that allows for Drew Holiday to gamble. It allows for Giannis to play, you know, to play center field and be all over the place. And without that, they don't have that backstop, and now, you know, sometimes Holiday is prone to an occasional gamble, and those turn into layups now, as opposed to, oh, big man at basket, let me do something else, where it would happen at least some of the time before. So, yeah, no, I think getting him back, and, you know, for what it's worth, it does not seem like the level of panic is especially high here about him. Like, I think that there's some degree of confidence that he will be back in not too long. But, you know, it also is like, you know, it's sort of the hockey playoffs. Oh, he's fine. He's day to day with the lower body injury kind of thing going on a little bit. So, you know, grain of salt. But it does not seem like there's like the Ibaka pickup was some people saw it as like, oh, I guess that means Brooke isn't coming back. And it's like nobody's expecting Ibaka to get big playoff minutes in most matchups. So that's not, it was not,
anyone's going to get big playoff minutes for the Clippers.
Right.
You know, yeah, I just like it as it's a body that they could use.
I mean,
you've got a guy who's a willing shooter on offense and a guy who can help play some defense. I mean, he can still help defense.
A body for a matchup against Philly.
He eats minutes. That's the important thing.
I will say, I think Milwaukee, you know, is one of the least interesting teams to talk about because we do so very obviously know what their issues are. They're still my favorite to win the title. I mean, I just Giannis is on another planet than everybody that isn't named Nikola Jokic and Steph Curry. So let's move to the team that we've probably talked about more than any other team this year. The Cleveland Cavaliers right now sitting in the four seed. I love this team so much, but I am so worried about Evan Mobley and the rookie wall. And I mean, they depend on him so much defensively, and it all, I'm worried they're going to fall off here the last little bit of the season, but they've been so fun and the defense has been so good. I mean, at no point have I watched the defense fall off. The offense can get a little dicey. And I think that that's the thing that they need to focus on. Am I wrong here? They gotta work Caris LeVert into this offensive game plan.
So I think the most important thing with Cleveland is they can't be satisfied. That's really where it's going to come into it. More than anything else, is their attitude has to be like, "Hey, we're playing with house money. Let's roll with what we got. Let's keep playing hard. Let's go with everything we got." They got to continue to go into this attitude of, we're underdogs. We got to keep fighting. We got to keep pushing, because they are playing with house money. It's really easy to fall into that trap of like, yo, we probably shouldn't even be here, you know, but it's more along the lines of like, they got to act like they're there. They belong, and to be there with a purpose. And that's what I'm really going to watch for in the next 20 games for them, you know, and listen, if Evan Mobley hits the rookie wall, it's a well-known thing, because it's a thing. It happens, you know, and it's a long season for these guys, and especially for kids coming from college into this thing and things like that. But I think they just got to stay hungry, and that will be the most important thing to watch really in the first 10 games of after the All-Star break for them.
I do vibes translate to the playoffs?
No,
I don't think so.
Yeah. So I think everything I said earlier about Toronto, I mean, change the names out, but I think those all sort of apply to Cleveland. Like they've won this season already. And, you know, the playoffs, I think, will be a bridge too far for them this year, especially with, all the injuries they've had. I just don't think they have enough guys. And I think we've talked about them. I don't think Caris LeVert is the answer. But, you know, between Jared Allen and Garland developing and Mobley, you know, being what he's been for much of the season, you have to say it's a smashing success of a season and has them set up well for the future. But it's a year or perhaps two too early for them.
It's an important experience, right? And what sucks for them is – they're going to be the team everybody's going to try to match up with in the playoffs. Like you're talking about tinkering with seeding. That's the team where everybody's going to be like, well, we won't play Cleveland in the first round, because that's probably going to be the easiest route, because the first round of the playoffs in the East is going to be a bloodbath.
I hope some team tanks or does something nefarious to my, you know, sports sentimentalities to play the Cleveland Cavaliers so that I can drop the "we believe" on this podcast and we can root for Cleveland outright. That's going to be great. I'm pumped for that.
Don't do the "we will root for Cleveland outright." Like, don't start including me into stuff like
I speak for all of us when I say,
"No, the hell you do, Dave."
We believe. I mean, I hate your favorite team, but I hate your favorite team especially if they mess with playoff seedings. Is that what you're saying, Dave?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Well, again, those I do for free. The third seed right now, and I don't know, this will be a boring one, I'm sure, the Philadelphia 76ers. Like, Joel Embiid has been incredible. They just made a big trade, you know. James Harden, that's the focus, right? Is making sure James Harden can play with Joel Embiid?
Yeah, I think we went sort of hammer and tongs at this when that trade was made. And is the fit perfect? Yeah. But it's still, you've gone from Seth Curry to James Harden. So who cares? Like, there's a lot more talent on the floor. And yeah, it's essentially a question of where is he at physically, both, you know, short term, but also long term. I mean, he's not getting any younger, and can he still be the guy that he was in Houston? And maybe he can maybe even be that guy late in playoff games now, with Embiid able to, you know, carry much more of the load than anyone else has ever done on his teams.
Could he possibly be the guy that he was in Oklahoma City, Mo? Like, does that guy exist anymore?
No, that dude's been dead and buried for a long freaking time.
Because that guy with Joel Embiid, no, not the six man, but just that kidding. Style of play. I mean, if he could be that guy with Joel Embiid, Philly would be a monster.
I don't even think James knows that guy existed, to be honest with you. Like, it's not something, it's so long ago. I mean, it was almost 10 years ago, right? Yeah. Like, what is it like we're talking about? Like, there's, I don't see that being the case there. I know that's wishful thinking there on your end.
I just
end,
want to
Dave,
see some relocation. I want to see him, you know, I want to see him try to make Joel Embiid's job easier when Joel has the ball.
I got,
he's going to say,
I got a stat for you, Dave.
Uh-oh.
So in Oklahoma City, just under 87% of James Harden's threes were assisted. Since he's left between Houston and Brooklyn, it's been about 30% of his threes are assisted. So that's just like, can he still be that guy who like relocates and hits spot up threes? Yeah, sure. But we kind of said maybe we'll see more of that when he plays with Chris Paul. Maybe we'll see more of that when he plays with Russell Westbrook. Maybe we'll see more of that. And we, to be fair, the first little bit of the Harden, KD, Irving, when they were all together, that like sort of that honeymoon, we saw that a little bit more. But that's not something he's done consistently in 10 years. So
yeah. I mean, it's a podcast. I was just kind of throwing that out there as a device, you know, to talk about. I know
you've done enough podcasts to know what you've done enough
James Harden to play any different. Now, here's the question, Mo. Joel Embiid is more of a popping big, and we've talked about this together. And James Harden, used to the guy that rolls hard to the basket. What are they going to do to bridge that gap? Is it going to be Embiid rolling to the basket more? You think we might see that?
I'm glad we got a very creative coach in Doc Rivers to figure that out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
No, it's the what'd I say? I think we'll see Embiid roll more, but it's not to the level that James is used to also, right? Like,
right.
He is not a roll, throw it at the rim. I'm gonna slam it down. He's not Clint Capella, nor should he be. He's
right.
Damn near gonna win the MVP or close to it by not being that guy in that instance. You know, and he has his mentalities. It goes back.
Those are harder and more dangerous miles too, by the way.
It's just more difficult. And again, there's just so many, just like Brooklyn's gonna have to figure out how to play with Simmons, they're going to have to figure out how to play with James Harden. James Harden is going to have to figure out how to play with Embiid. Again, in 20-something games, that's not a lot of games to really figure all of that stuff out. It's challenging in that end. And then just everything, all the questions we have defensively and everything that goes with it. And then you got to hope his hamstring is still going to hold on, right? And that's been such an issue. Like, we're used to James Harden being, you know, indestructible in Houston, right? He barely missed games there. You know, Brooklyn, towards the end of that season last year, then he strained the hamstring, and it's been a problem ever since. And I think those are the things I'd be really worried about if I was Philly going forward there. You know, they have more talent on the floor now. I think they're actually going to be one shooter short now, having actually had a trade Seth Curry in that instance. But It's still going to be tough, and figuring out how you're going to balance Embiid's post-ups with Harden's pick and rolls and things like that. And we're trying to figure out in his 11th year or whatever year in his career, is he going to go back to being a relocating moving guy? You're wishing for a lot. And
never a great thing to say that you're relying on George Niang, right? Like that's going to be, he's going to be a very important player for them, I think, with the shooting.
Coach Thorpe is going to be very upset with you for
this is about role, not about the player, right? But like to me, when you're getting that far down your bench, and it's like, okay, this is we need you to be able to hit shots. I mean that's trouble, especially with the defenses in the East, man.
It's not just George's Yang. It's Korkmaz, who's been cold all season.
All season. Awful.
You know, it's Danny Green, who's streaky. You know, it's Thybulle, who teams are going to leave open. That's the concern about that team shooting-wise. Like, do you have enough shooting on that roster to really make the James Harden pick and roll worth it? You know, that's really going to make that difference in that if Thybulle's on the floor, well, I'm just going to suck all the way in with his guy. And hey, if Thybulle makes the shot, cool. He's going to cut. Well, he's going to cut into an Embiid who's rolling to the rim. I'm fine. You know, I'll live with that. It's those types of things there. I think they're going to have a lot more challenges there. It's not a very easy plug and play scenario in that stuff. And I think that's something that's my big question for Philly is can you figure this out in the next 20 games?
I think they're going to find that their best offense isn't choosing between Embiid post-ups and Harden pick and rolls. It's going to be running Harden pick and rolls into Embiid post-ups. I think there's, you know, Harden has been really good at like hitting guys on lobs. I think the space that Embiid takes up and then can be effective with the ball makes him so much bigger a target to hit as kind of a roll because you get him the ball sort of on the move, both feet in the paint. Yeah, that's not a dunk, but it's a pretty good advantage situation. And I think we're going to see a lot of that if they can actually get on the floor and develop some chemistry together.
I think the guys we really got to talk about who we didn't even mention, which says a lot also, is Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris, right? Those are going to be the key guys. It's going to be can those guys play with James and Embiid on the floor at the same time, right? And not have to sacrifice as much. I think Maxey attacking the second side's going to be interesting and going to be a lot of fun there. It's my question is going to be, what does Tobias Harris do? And that will be the other thing that Doc Rivers will have to figure out is carving that role out for the Sixers.
That almost strikes me as a good problem to have. I think at this point, yes. Tobias Harris is a pretty underrated player. I think he is the guy who is in the, oh my God, his contract is so bad that we kind of forget he's a really good like three-level scorer. Like he's not elite, but in terms of being your third guy who can attack a closeout, who can hit a spot up three, who can get to the rim and score. I think this is a really good chance for him to demonstrate, yeah, he's not worth 40 whatever million a year, but he's a really good player.
Okay, the last two teams currently tied for first. We'll start with the Bulls, who have been, I think, a pleasant surprise. You know, DeMar DeRozan has been incredible this season, the best mid-range shooter in the league this year. He's hitting game winners. They've got Lonzo and Caruso. That helps their defense, and they're going to hopefully be getting those guys back soon. Vucevic has finally rounded into form, and they're currently the one seed. How come I don't believe in them? I love this team. I just cannot buy all the way in on this team actually coming out of the East. Am I missing something, guys?
No, you don't believe in them because nobody really believes in them, right? It's one of those things where we're just not sure. It's they are actually the Phoenix Suns of last season in the way they're going into the playoffs. If you think about it, Zach LaVine is playing the Devin Booker role. DeMar DeRozan is playing the Chris Paul role coming into it. Then you have a lot of great other pieces in there. Hopefully those guys come back healthy and ready to roll in Caruso and Ball because it's just such a massive difference for this team when they have both of those guys on the court together, what it does for them defensively and how it really kind of just forces the other teams into turnovers. Those two guys just having the ability to really wreck offenses. And I think that's an important thing that they're missing with those guys. It's good to have Vooch going. I just think we're all kind of treating them in the sense of I'm going to steal the Seth Partnow line here of just, hey man, we did a great job. We're going to pat your head there. Good job right there in the 1-2 seed situation. Hey, we love it. But like, it's depending on who they match up with. I don't know if we feel comfortable saying they have the ability to stop Giannis
in a first round series? Is it stop Embiid in a first round series? Like, I don't know if they can, you know. I think a series with them in Boston would be fantastic, because I think it'd be a lot of fun watching those two teams go at each other and go nuts in everything that they have and that stuff. So I just think we have a question mark just because we haven't really seen it from them. And I just think that just reminds me of the Phoenix Suns.
All right, then, Seth, what do you want to see this team focus on the rest of the way? Like, a problem they need to solve, or just something that you want to see more of?
I am wondering, I don't know if it's something they can really solve either way the rest of the year. I worry about in the playoffs. You mentioned that Ball and Caruso obviously have been huge for their defense. I think that teams are going to do a lot to, okay, well, you want Alex Caruso guarding our best player. We're going to run some action, get him matched up on DeMar DeRozan. So you're talking about a matchup with the Celtics. Okay, the Bulls want to get, they want to get Marcus Smart off of DeRozan. All right, here's Jaylen Brown. And whereas, like, you know, the Bulls are going to want to have Ball on Tatum, probably. And it's like, okay, we get some action, run. Okay, well, now we've got him up against DeMar DeRozan. And you just see how those mismatches play out against the Bulls in too many matchups. And so I think that's kind of what I've worried about. And then the other part is, like, they're going to be very dependent on getting contributions in the postseason from Ayodesumu, who's a rookie. Second-round rookie who's come on great, and Javonte Green, who has been really a kind of the Bruce Brown of this year. Fantastic story. How does a 6'4 power forward who can't shoot work in the playoffs? So I think that's – for as good a story as they've been and as fun as they've been to watch, it's hard to see that working at least second-round and deeper in the playoffs.
Yeah. So, Mo, what would you focus on, man? If you were coaching this team or advising, what would you be focused on?
That's a tough question, Dave.
Isn't that
hard?
I mean,
that's the thing, is you can't just pinpoint it one thing. You just keep rolling what you got and hope it works in the offseason. And to what Seth said, that's the thing, is they're actually a really schemable team. They're a team when you have that. They're a great regular season team. I have a lot of questions for them in the playoffs for everything that Seth said. Okay, cool. I'm going to run stuff. It's going to put you guys in difficult positions defensively, and let's see how you handle that. And that's where it gets a little bit tough. And, you know, it's hard having Alex Caruso to have to guard fours all of a sudden, you know, or something like that. It's going to put them in a tough position. I mean, they've did it against the Knicks. It worked against Randall, but we've seen what the Knicks season has looked like. So they've gotten away with a lot in the regular season. Whether they'll be able to in the playoffs is going to be a challenge. They're one of those teams that I look at going like, man, playoffs might not be that nice to you.
All right. A team that I think is better built for the playoffs than they are for the regular season. The Miami Heat are currently tied for the one seed. So, you know, what do I know? Not a lot. Look, Eric Spoelstra has done, I don't know, how would you guys grade it? An A+? Do you give him 2+ for the coaching job he's done this season? Just spare parts, plug and play. He's just made it work. Put Kyle Lowry into the mix, and that works. Everything seems to work for Eric Spoelstra. So what should they be focusing on the rest of the way, guys? I mean, we know that this is a team that's going to be focused on their seeding, and they're going to be focused on their health, but what do they need to fix on the court?
They need to focus on end-of-game offense, because that's really where they tend to struggle in close game situations. And I love Jimmy Butler. I think he's awesome. I think he's great. I get very nervous when their end-of-game offense is we're running isolations for Jimmy Butler, and it's good for 3.5 quarters. But in those last 5 minutes, it tends to not work out for them. And I think that's the area they got to find an end-of-game offense. I know they haven't had Tyler Hero for stretches. They've dealt with injuries throughout the entire year, but I think they just need to stay with their offense, stay with their motion offense and things like that, and stay out of the Jimmy Butler isolation stuff. Like, it's going to pay off sometimes, but more often than not, I think it's going to fail you. And I think they need to find an end of game offense that they can roll with.
I mean, what's the solution aside from just sticking to their offense? Like, is it maybe try Kyle Lowry as the guy? Let him lead your late game offense.
No, I think, honestly, I think their offensive system is good enough
that you could run to end in games. It's funny to me sometimes with teams. Ride with what got you there. You know, like, why change in the last 5 minutes? You know, if you're in a close game, tight game scenario, continue to run the stuff you got. Sometimes I think running into this isolation stuff, Jimmy's not good enough in the one-on-one in crunch time, I feel like, that's really going to get you that far. And that's, you know, you're making a run for a championship. You need to get that stuff figured out. I just don't think they have a guy. I don't think there is a clean solution.
I think it's not so much late game offense. I mean, it is. It's late game, how they're closing games and how they balance. Like, they can put a really good defensive lineup on the floor that has zero spacing. And they can put lineups with spacing on the floor that are going to have two or three kind of eat at Joe's signs in terms of, you know, you can get some spacing on the floor if you put, you know, lineups with Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson and Max Strus out there. Who are they stopping? So finding a lineup that just has that balance, that seems like that's going to be a little bit tough for them, I think. Like, that's the worry for them, for me, is, you know, it's a team that seems like they're so predicated on having this elite defense. But then you look at that lineup, and then here's where, again, not to get back to Boston, but you look at Boston's elite defensive lineup and Miami's elite defensive lineup, and Boston's has more shot creation. Like, and I don't think it's close. And has more shooting. So I think that's the worry you have is, now maybe they just dominate over the course of the game, and, you know, they, Duncan Robinson gets away with it against some like bench units and hits, bangs four threes, and you're up eight with 2 minutes left, so it doesn't matter. But I just, that the finding what that balance closing five is I think going to be the biggest challenge for them.
Okay. Well, the games are going to be back, I guess, Thursday night, and 45 days, guys, till the playoffs. Anything else that you guys are looking forward to as we look ahead to the playoff push?
Just some great basketball, man. We have a great scoring race. I don't know if anybody's aware of that. That's going to be amazing. That's like,
I think Embiid's
going to
get that. I think that that's one of the little adding James Harden. Embiid is going to get some opportunities for sure to have some big games.
Huh. I thought it would go the other way, to be honest with you.
I'm kind of thinking the other way, but
guys, I'm thinking about from a marketing perspective, what would you do? Do you want your big man to win MVP? I mean, I know I would. Yeah, I'd be pushing that one. Although I'm pretty sure LeBron is gunning for it.
That's nice.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get a scoring title at some point.
I thought he was in the running for executive of the year.
And on that note, that's going to do it for this week, folks. We'll catch you next week right here on the Athletic NBA Show with another episode of Nerder, She Wrote.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.